Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, graduation season is upon us, so it is fun for parents. It's a feeling of relief. You are happy that your child has made it across that stage. But what if you have another or a third or a fourth child that you are trying to prepare for college? What now? What have you learned from your initial experience with getting that first child through? Well, tonight we're going to talk about some of those tips that you can use, your experiences from that first go-round of getting your child through college and now preparing for the next. The phone lines are open. If you've got questions or if you can help us with what your experience has been like with getting multiple kids through school, we'd want to hear from you and getting them prepared. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are now open. Our guest tonight joining us is Jessica Brown. She is the author of How to Pay for College When You Are Broke. She's also the president of the College Girl Foundation. Again, phone lines are open. We want you to join the conversation. Be part of it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jessica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about what parents should be able to pick up from once they send their kid one through and now preparing for the second. Or as I said, third or fourth. What is it that we should be able to use information-wise, experience-wise, from the first go-round of sending our kids through college?
Well, I think one of the main major lessons learned after you send your first child to college is that parents realize that deadlines are critical to their child's success. Deadlines are important because scholarships happen all the time. If your child isn't applying for scholarships and they miss out on a major opportunity, you're going to know for the next child that goes to college to make sure that they utilize scholarships and make sure they're adhering to deadlines. Additionally, with the FAFSA annually becomes available on October 1st of every year, and financial aid is first come, first served. The faster you complete the FAFSA, the faster you'll find out back from an institution exactly how much aid you will receive, as institutions also have their own scholarship deadlines, and many students and miss out on those deadlines because they're not reading their paperwork. So now they've ended up forfeiting tens of thousands of dollars that could have contributed to their education. So I think that's one of the main things that parents definitely learn from the first child is the importance of deadlines.
And so important having a child in first year in college myself. And you mentioned an interesting thing when you said students miss out, because many of these colleges, especially once a student is in, you know, the one that you have in now, they'll send all of that information to the student and not necessarily the parent. And so the student has to pass that on to the parent. So it would seem to me one of the important things to learn, too, is that once that second one comes in, to remember, you have to stay on your child who's in college to make sure that you're getting that information to keep them in college for the next year and that they give you the information to take care of what you need to take care of for them.
Well, and I mean, you bring up a great point, right? I think it works both ways. At the end of the day, our institutions are looking at your child as an adult.
Right.
So as an adult, they need to begin to become responsible, and that's in all aspects, not just waking up every morning for class, also their financial aspects, staying on top of their student accounts, staying on top of their assignments, adhering to guidelines, right? Because even though parents can have access to their child's account by signing a FERPA form that provides them access, it's still, that's not the parent's responsibility every 2 seconds to remind you on what is needed to do. They got you to college, right? Now, at this point, it's up to you to matriculate in college and be successful and learn how to be independent. So it's up to the student to remind their parent of things to do, especially if parents have other kids that are growing up. You know, it's kind of hard to stay on top of the oldest kid who is out of the house, who's supposed to begin to become more responsible and independent. So I think that's important that the student also takes accountability in this situation, as parents cannot do everything. However, parents, of course, need to still be in the loop of everything that is going on, as many parents are paying out of pocket their child's shortfall. There always needs to be a conversation. Yet in terms of students, once you go to college, we recognize a student as an adult. If you did not sign your name for your scholarship, your parent calling us to talk to us about, well, they're still a child, they didn't know that they had to sign this and they missed out, it's kind of, I'm sorry, but this is where we are, and this is a learning lesson going forward.
202, sometimes an expensive learning lesson. 202.
Right.
319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight, our focus is on getting that next child ready for college once you've gotten one or two or three through, and what you've learned from your experiences of getting those initial children or child through college, and the tips that can help you the second go-round. 202-319-7810. Jessica, before we go to the phone lines, let's talk about how early should you be preparing, even if it's your second child, how early should you be preparing and thinking about that college process?
It really starts the moment that they go into high school. I mean, those 4 years go by so fast. And it's so important that the moment your child is, especially in high school, in the ninth grade level, you're exposing them to college tours. You're beginning to find what their interests are, so you can kind of see maybe what potential academic program they may fall into based off of their interests, and then begin to research schools throughout that high school matriculation that fuel that interest. That will support the child's future endeavors. So this way, once senior year comes, the child is already prepared in knowing where they potentially want to go to school and, of course, understand how much the school costs, as over the past 3 or 4 years, you've been financially preparing as well as your child has been academically been preparing for their educational endeavor.
And preparing for that is going to events, finding out what's out there, finding out the scholarships that are out there. I know you're a College Girl Foundation, and that's girl with a U, not an I.
Yes.
Sort of is in that mix. Talk a little bit about, you've got an event that's coming up pretty soon, correct?
Yes. I am the president of the College Girl Foundation, which provides minority DMV high school students an opportunity to go on free college tours, get monthly educational programs, as well as scholarships. Our program is absolutely free for all students who are accepted into our organization, as our mission is to create a world of opportunities for students to become the next future leaders of tomorrow. And not only does College Girl stick with students in high school, but even when you matriculate to college, we still mentor and support those students as well, as we are all one big family. And on June 4th, between 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hamilton Live on 14th Street, we will host our annual scholarship luncheon. Our annual scholarship luncheon highlights our program. It recognizes our graduating seniors, and it also gives us the opportunity to fundraise and showcase what our future goals are for the next upcoming academic year. So this event is extremely important. We have 14 graduates this year. Additionally, our first class of College Girl Foundation graduates graduate from college this weekend. So we have a lot to celebrate at this event. Tickets can be located on Eventbrite, or you can go to my Instagram at College Girl, GURLJB, for the link. And it's called the College Girl Foundation Scholarship Luncheon at the Hamilton Live. Tickets can be purchased, and if you're unable to attend, you can still donate to this life-changing program, as we need your support to ensure that we are helping students reach their dreams.
And is this for just young girls or young men and young girls?
It's the program is mixed, so it's just my name is College Girl.
I got you.
So I've named the foundation after College Girl, but however, it is boys and girls that are in my program, and that's so important that you say that, as it's one of our biggest missions to ensure that we're increasing enrollment for males, as we know male statistics going to college is very low,
mm-hmm.
And we are trying our best to make sure that once you go on a College Girl tour, there's nothing like it. It's life-changing. All of my students this year are college bound, and that's because of the work that we do. So I encourage the community in late August to have your child, as long as they're sophomore and up, they can sign up to be a part of the College Girl Foundation and submit an application and hope that they're a part of the next upcoming class.
All right. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. College is our hot topic, and getting in there for parents and helping yourselves through the process by learning maybe some of your mistakes and some of the good things you did the first time around in sending one of your children through college. Let's go to the phone lines, and let's go to Darlene calling from Waldorf. Go right ahead, Darlene, with your question or comment.
Well, I guess it's more or less like a comment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mother of four girls, and I had one to attend Hampton and one to attend Virginia State University and one now at Spelman College.
Okay.
So I would like to say, like, one of the biggest things for my family was scholarships. And it just so happened that my daughter or daughters, they were on it themselves. I mean, you know, we learned from the oldest one, like, some little hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
But I can truly say my daughter at Spelman College has not paid a dime, and she's a rising junior.
Wow.
All because of scholarships.
And it's
amazing.
And was that, Darlene, based on grades, community involvement, and or more? And was she prepared in terms of knowing what she needed to be doing to make herself the most eligible for scholarships?
I think she definitely knew what to do. And, you know, I can give a little shout out to North Point High School in Waldorf, because, you know, they certainly, the counselor at that time definitely had her set up, but also her interest,
mm-hmm.
of knowing, I know what could have helped my older sister, so maybe I should be already applying for scholarships. And, you know, like, she was a debutante. You know, she did the most.
Mm-hmm.
She did the most. And, yes, her grades were, like, excellent. I mean, you know, I take no credit for that. This is all her now.
Well, you're such a good parent, but obviously you had to be doing something right, just have your child to even have that mindset. Well, congratulations, Darlene. And you give us all inspiration to get all of our kids through
yes.
schools, the ones that are still at home, and to keep the ones that are there. So thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jessica, before we go to break, and we can sort of continue it if you want to continue the point, Darlene talked about counseling and counselors. Mm-hmm. And they are so crucial in terms of the process, at least from the point of view of my experience has been with my daughter who went on to college. What's your sense of where counselors fit in this and helping parents and students in this process and helping parents learn about what they don't know and what they can use moving forward for the next child?
Well, counselors are very important. You know, they're kind of the liaison between your transition into college. You know, however, some counselors really, 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 really love their job, and they're always getting resources, and they're sharing that with them. Some may lack resources. However, it is important for the student to continuously check in with their counselor, as you never know what may be available. Some counselors may be more proactive in sending mass emails, whereas some you need to go personally pay a visit. So you want to make sure you're building that relationship, not just with your counselor, also with your teachers as well in high school, as many of them are connected to different organizations or different networks and institutions that may be able to get you additional funds. So you want to make sure you are tapping into all the resources. And just like Darlene said, her daughter was a debutante. I was a debutante as well. You know, and being a debutante, we raise funds for our scholarship. If you're a part of a church home, I was a part of a church home back in New Jersey where my church gave every graduating senior a scholarship. So it's not just tapping into, of course, your high school, but tapping into organizations and people that currently are in your community and whatever extracurricular activities you participate in.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, that's you, Suzanne, and others. Stay right there. We're going to get to you in a second. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking about what parents need to remind themselves of what worked best for them when they got their first child through college and now preparing for the second or third, and also remembering what didn't work and how to stay away from the pitfalls that you might have stepped into that first time around. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines. Suzanne is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Suzanne, with your question or comment.
A little different from Darlene, but I wanted to share this with people because I don't really understand how or why it works. But I had two daughters going to college. One went to a university, and she got a lot of loans, and I got a personal loan to finance it. The other one went to a university and then dropped out and started working. And then she decided she wanted to go back to school. She was still living at home. She filled out the FAFSA, and she went to a junior college, a Montgomery College, and she actually got Pell Grants. So she got grants that she did not have to pay back because she was working. She wasn't working enough to finance, you know, living expenses, but for the mere fact that she lived at home, I filled out the FAFSA for her, and she was working, she was able to get grants that she did not have to pay back. So I don't know why the government does that, but, you know, she finance. They paid a lot of her tuition going to junior college, and then when she finally went to a university, they paid the first year of the university through Pell Grants. So I don't know if they still exist. This was some time ago, but it was a big relief to me because I have no loans for her education at all. The government paid for it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Suzanne. I was going to say, Jessica, what do you make of what Suzanne was saying, sort of that kind of situation?
Well, for a Pell Grant can't really pay for a whole college education unless you are at a community college.
Right.
Cost per credit hour is probably $200 or $150, you know, per credit hour at community college, whereas you're going to a Howard University, cost per credit hour could be $700 per credit. So you're talking about two different types of institutions and price. If you're getting a full Pell Grant right now, the Pell Grant for 2022 is $6,895. Of course, that can cover a degree of a couple semesters at a community college for the year, because again, the cost per credit hour is not as much as an institution. Now, if she did go on to a four-year college, many of these junior colleges, community colleges, they have partnerships with local institutions that are four-year degree granting programs that you can probably get a $10,000 transfer scholarship to. So therefore, yes, she probably did not pay for her university studies to complete the bachelor's degree. But in terms of the other child immediately went to a four-year school, never went to a junior college. And the cost of tuition was way more expensive, which is why they had to borrow loans and borrow private loans.
And Jessica, is that, you know, I went to a junior college for a couple of years to save money, then transferred to the University of Maryland. Is that an option that parents really should look at, say, if maybe their first child went straight into a university? And then the second child, they think, okay, wait a minute, either we need to save money or we don't know if this child is really ready to go to a four-year institution. They can get all their general credits at a community college and save money. Is that an option that you would suggest more and more parents take, or is it particular to the child?
It is very particular to the child. You know, community college is a great, you know, of course you could save money. Just like you said, you can take your generic classes, you know, however, there's nothing like immediately going to a four-year institution, immediately graduating from high school. You're talking about two different environments. And so it really ultimately depends on the child and how they learn. If you really have that financial plan of let's save money, go to community college and transfer in, great. You know, however, if your dream is to go to a four-year school, you can make that possible, as every year over $100 million in scholarship money goes unclaimed. So
why is that, Jessica? Why does that $100 million sit there? Is it because folks don't know about it? And are we talking about federal funds or funds from like the Rotary Club, fraternities, sororities? So what is that $100 million? Where is that? What does it encompass?
That $100 million is, a lot of it is like your Rotary Clubs, your Deltas, your national scholarships, right? Or, you know, people apply, they don't claim their money because they don't have a proof of enrollment for the funds to release.
Okay.
You know, so it is so important that students are continuously searching for scholarships, right? Like I tell students all the time, stop scrolling on Instagram and start doing. Like there is so much, like, students can tell me where to find the best wig bundles, shoes from here to New Jersey, you know, who has this, who has that, who to follow. But can't nobody tell me where to find a scholarship? Now, that same information that you tried to find for your wants of researching hair and nails and shoes and materialistic items is the same way you would do research to find a scholarship. You went on Google, you typed it in, you researched, you looked at hashtags, you know, you hashtag, you looking up scholarships, you hashtag looking up financial aid, so on and so forth, you know? So it is so important that if students really want their dreams to come true, they need to put more time into investing into their financial future and securing their educational endeavors. And that would mean searching for scholarships, making that time to find scholarships. A lot of students are like, oh, I'm tired of writing essays. I've been writing essays for admissions. Well, guess what? That's all you really have to do. And if you want to go to college and not graduate in a massive amount of debt, like a majority of us, then that is your best course of action. And a lot of students allow their parents to just pay for college. I was working with a family last week. They telling me, hey, my daughter hasn't applied for not one scholarship, or have we not done the FAFSA? The FAFSA is so important, no matter whatever your financial status is. Even if you make lots of money, you can still qualify for certain academic scholarships at the institution. But if you have not completed your FAFSA, which is a major requirement, the funds will never disperse and you will never be offered any institutional aid. So you can't just expect that just because you may make a certain amount, a school may not qualify you for any institutional funds. You must fill out the FAFSA. You know, now this family has a child that's going to a school that's worth over $80,000, and their plan is Sallie Mae, which you should never want to take out that much money over 4 years. That's over $300,000 that you're going to have to pay back for undergraduate education. You're not even a PhD level. This is just for a bachelor's degree. So it is so important that parents are doing the FAFSA, that students are doing their part. Do not make excuses for your child. Why are you not thinking about your retirement right now? Because the more money you pay for your child's educational endeavors, the less money you are saving for your retirement.
And don't we know that? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. See, that's why you are the college girl. Jessica Brown, author of How to Pay for College When You're Broke, and also she is the president of the College Girl Foundation. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Washington is calling from Maryland with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Washington.
Hi, my name is Dwight Washington, calling from Prince George's County, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to chime in. First of all, thanks for having me, and I just wanted to real quickly chime in on the mistake that I made with my two kids in college. I have a son and a daughter. The first one went to Morgan State University on a music scholarship, and then my daughter, the second child, went to Howard University also on a music scholarship and an academic scholarship. And once they were in college, they they had a student ambassador to help them navigate to make sure that they were on point, you know, with all their credits and classes. However, I would say, yes, they needed to be independent to do that, but the parents should also have a way to follow up with them, because with the first child, he did not get all of his credits when it was time for him to go on to his next level. And so I turned quickly to my other child at Howard and said to her, are you sure that you have all of your credits and everything? She says, yes, Dad, I'm on point, you know. And she was also led by a student ambassador, but it turned out she was doing a lot of leadership things. She was the a two-year drum major at Howard University. She was in a couple of different law sororities. So bottom line is her senior year she fell short because she was a little misled by you know, the student ambassador.
So let me ask you this then. So is your point, because what it sounds like is that you feel like you should have been, as the parent, a little bit more involved once you got them into school to make sure that they were staying on track and not just sort of relying on those mentors and ambassadors. Would that be correct? Am I understanding you?
Yes, sir, absolutely. Because I know we do, the kids should be in more independent and prepared for college before they get there and once they're there, because they have to handle all of these things. You know, the state of my daughter was involved in so many leadership things at school, you know, which it actually panned out because she has gone on now to graduate, but she had to go back. She didn't graduate on time. She had to go back the following semester to complete some credits because of that. So,
right.
Yes, I think the parents should also be involved, because especially if you have a busy child that's trying to that's involved with so many things. But I would say she did graduate,
right,
and she went on to also receive a full tuition scholarship for law school at Pepperdine University.
Well, then that's fantastic. Sound like it came back around. But thank you so much, and appreciate your honesty. Jessica, so Mr. Washington is basically saying, got my kids in school. I had them. They were connected to these ambassadors. But, you know, the ambassadors, I'm assuming, are students too, right? So how much, when we're trying to learn things as parents, and let me say again, I'm a parent of a first year college student who is my daughter goes to college in California. So she's all the way across. She's on the other end of the country. So you want to stay involved, but if they're not local, especially, you know, what can you do? What should you do? Because you mentioned earlier, like you said, you know, you can't call up and say, if your name's not on something, say, look, my daughter's not paying this back and that back. And they're like,
right,
Mr. Bryan, I can't talk to you. So what should we be doing to avert what happened to Mr. Washington, where he's saying, I wish I had been more involved? Do you advise that once the kids get to college that parents stay as involved or more involved, or what level of involvement should we have?
Well, for one, he said that his daughter was involved in so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
If his daughter was involved in so many different things, she should have took a step back from one thing to focus on the main reason why she was there, which was her education.
Mm-hmm.
This way, what can dad do, right? Dad is not really there. And institutions, again, if you don't sign the forms off, you know, institutions are very reluctant to speak with the parent.
Right.
These children are the customer and the adult. So, I mean, I always encourage, you know, for parents to still, no matter what, keep that line of communication open with their child. But I also know, too, I've been in a situation working in the financial aid offices where the child has lied to their parent the entire time.
Hmm.
And the whole time the parent thought they dropped them off to school, and I have to be the bearer of bad news to say your child hasn't been enrolled in 12 months.
Oh! That's a whole nother show.
That's a whole nother show, right? But, you know,
it's
really keeping the line of communication open, you know, and making sure that everybody's collectively working together. If you are overloaded by a lot of the organizations that you are part of, you need to take a step back and focus on the main reason why you are here. If you are a student that's not doing great, you need to be honest with yourself and follow up with the advisor centers, right? I mean, ambassadors, where was the counselor? Where was the advisor? You know, like, there's something that I might be probably missed in the story, but those are your first points of contact at all times when it comes to your curriculum, your schedule scheme, understanding your graduation credits requirements, so on and so forth. So I think everybody has a responsibility in this, but the student has to be held accountable at all times at a higher standard than their parent.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lessons learned, tips that you can use to get that second, third, fourth child through college, and maybe some of the missteps you made with the first one. We're already hearing some stories about what parents have learned and what they've learned from their children, good and bad. So we're going to continue this conversation. This is the Insight segment. We're going to be back right after this timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher, and this is the Insight segment. Jessica, talk to me a little bit about how whether parents should consider these programs where their high school student can take dual enrollment classes, either in the school that they're in and get credit towards an associate's degree from a community college, mm-hmm. and or some of these programs where students are immersed in community colleges. I know in Prince George's County, their community college students actually are on that campus taking college courses as high school students and taking their high school classes. What are your thoughts on those kinds of programs and whether or not parents should be into that, focused on that, open to that?
I think that those programs are life-changing, and they are really preparing their child for their next step in their education, which would be to go into college. And having the ability to come in with college credits, you know, automatically boosts you to this way. You will, maybe your last semester, you may not have to do because you came in with so many credits. So now, with you not having to possibly pay for the last semester, look how much money you've saved because you came in with those college credits. So I think that that is a great idea for students and families to begin to think about doing dual enrollment. It's going to not only help the student academically be boosted when they go to college, but also give them that college environment and experience. So this way they can kind of, the transition will be a little bit more seamless when they finally do enroll in their freshman year.
You talked about FAFSA, but we also talked about those scholarships that colleges have, sort of, you know, their own institutional scholarships. And so I know parents often were focused on that FAFSA because that's sort of the big, big shining light that we all know we should fill out, as you mentioned, no matter what your income. But what about the CSS that comes from the College Board? That is particular. Not all schools require that. Is that correct?
Right. Not all schools require it. The main thing that you need to focus on is the federal government and doing that FAFSA. Mm-hmm. As the institution is recognizing the FAFSA before they're ever going to recognize the CSS profile, as that doesn't grant you any federal Pell Grants or provide you any student loans if you complete that. So it is so important that families strictly focus on completing that FAFSA. That is going to be very important, especially for institutional scholarships. Again, as financial aid is first come, first serve. So the quicker you complete your FAFSA and you submit that information, the quicker the financial aid office can get back to you with an award package, which will allow you time to figure out how you're going to family financial plan to pay the bill off.
But a college can require you to fill out the CSS, correct, if you're applying for financial aid, or how does that work? Do you have to do the CSS if a college is tied to that?
Well, I've heard some schools want you to fill out the CSS, but the main thing that needs to be filled out is the FAFSA at all institutions, as that's the only way you'll get any federal funding, which has nothing to do with the CSS profile.
Let's go back, if we can, talking about counseling at schools. Can be different if your child is in a private school versus a public school. Obviously, the attention that you get from the counselor just in mere numbers that they're dealing with can have an impact there. Where can counselors go wrong with students? We know that we need them as parents and as students, but what should parents have a radar up for in terms of counselors where they can go wrong and what some parents may have already learned as they prepare for their next child to go to school?
Well, I mean, you know, again, like when you mentioned private school, I mean, you're paying for an additional level of service. Whereas public schools, you know, they're public. So, so it really depends on the person. You know, I've worked in multiple financial aid offices, and I could say that I'm the only one who was very compassionate or wanted to offer resources or who immersed themselves after work in work to learn more information to share. You know, whereas you have people that have been counselors 30, 40 years and they're still saying the same thing. When times have changed and they've evolved. So it really depends, you know, on the person. And, you know, even if sometimes the counselor you're assigned to, you don't relate to, but maybe the other counselor that's sitting next door, you may relate to. You know, either way, there's always going to be that one person in that advisory or guidance center that really, really, really has those resources and information and will overshare that with the students. So it really depends, you know, on the counselor, unfortunately. As you know, I've had lots of students that I've consulted over the years and heard that their counselors don't provide any information. They're hard to get in touch with their transcripts, or they're late in submitting their Common App information. So again, it just really depends. And if that is the case, then now the parent has to intervene and contact the principal to get the counselor on their job of making sure at bare minimum, even if you're not sharing resources, you submit the child's information on time.
Jessica, do you hear from any parents who've had an experience where either they've encouraged their child to work or their child wanted to work during college and now may have a different take as they're preparing to send their other children to school about whether or not they want them to work? Do you hear parents talking about that aspect of their children in school and working and what they think about that?
I don't really hear parents talk about it too much because many students were working before they got to college. So they already have the idea of time management. Some students, yes, maybe they may be their first job that they're getting at an institution because they were awarded federal work study, which is a part-time job on campus that allows students to not only gain professional experience, but of course get a little bit of money in their pocket. So it really depends on the child. As I'm not opposed to working, but I would work sophomore year, you know, after you kind of got your feet wet and you understand the lay of the land. Freshman year, I would start working sophomore year, as this way freshman year you can completely focus on your studies. As freshman year, what a lot of students don't realize, as much fun as it is, it's also a very critical year for students, as because that's going to be the foundation of your GPA. So if you start off very, very low, it's going to be hard to really build that back up to try to be eligible for scholarships or get over a 3.0. So it is so important that students are primarily focusing freshman year on their academics.
Is it important for parents and students to, when they're looking at their colleges, right? You're looking at the dining hall. I know that's a big thing now. When I took my daughter to school, you know, they have those things so spruced up now, and it grabs your attention when you look at, boy, what do I get to eat? Look at all of the restaurants that are here. So that's a big shiny object. But how much should parents be looking at things like career services that the college should offer? Is that something that we tend to bypass, or should that be something kind of low down on the totem pole when we're looking at where we should be sending our kids to school and how we make a decision based on maybe that criteria?
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate because that is one of the main things that many parents bypass. You know, you want to know what your career services center, your advisory staff looks like, because these are going to be the people that are going to help you find internships. They'll help you find scholarships. They'll help you build out your classes for each semester. So it's so important that parents are not just going to financial aid and being on top of them, but also putting in that same effort into those resources and even mental health services, right? Like, you're telling me every institution for the most part has a counseling department, and barely their students go to visit. And going to college is a very a time of anxiety, you know, for the parent and the student, you know, a culture shock, moving away from home. So it's so important that the parents are seeing more than just the shiny new cafeteria with all of the best franchises in there. The facilities of the dormitory, is there air conditioning? You know, what do the classrooms look like? What does the staff look like? How does the staff communicate with one another? Because do you want your child to just be just a number at an institution, or do you want your child to be in a smaller classroom size where the professor knows their name? These are things that parents need to think about, not get so caught up in the name of the school, but really what you're paying for. Because at the end of the day, college is an investment. So you want to make sure you're making the right investment, not just financially, but educationally and personally.
All great advice. She is the college girl. She is Jessica Brown, author of How to Pay for College When You're Broke. She's got the College Girl Foundation CGF Scholarship Luncheon. It's the annual fundraiser that honors CGF graduates and program achievements. It's going to be at the Hamilton Live, 614th Street, Northwest, D.C. And give the date and the time of the event, Jessica.
The date is June 4th, and it's a Saturday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. We will have the beautiful sounds of Imani Grace there as our band, and we're going to celebrate our graduates and raise funds for the next upcoming academic year.
All right. Thank you, Jessica, for all of your advice, and we appreciate all of our callers tonight for joining us on the Insight segment. That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, May 12th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.